let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some ass.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen and Kristen, proudly supported this month by our friends from Foolish Wit. Head to foolishwit.com to check out all the details on their upcoming show. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and find us on Spotify. Tonight we're talking all things books, music and theatre, and we've even got a special Harry Styles thing to talk about, so if you're a Harry fan, be listening. But to kick off the show today, we're sending a big chookers to the cast of Come From Away, opening this week at the Baycourt Theatre in Tauranga. So to kick off the show, here is that fabulous opening number, Welcome to the Rock.
On the northeast tip of North America, on an island called Newfoundland, there's an airport. It used to be one of the biggest airports in the world, and next to it is a town called Gander.
Welcome to the Rock, if you come from away, you probably understand about a half of what we say. They say no man's an island, but an island makes a man,
especially when one comes from one like Newfoundland. Welcome to the Rock.
That morning, I'm in the classroom. It's our first day back, and the school buses are on strike, so I'm covering for Annette, who's running late.
Sorry, Beulah. How's the kids?
Not exactly thrilled to be inside on such a gorgeous day. So I told them we'd only have a half day this morning, and they were quite pleased, until I told them we'd have the other half in the afternoon.
Welcome to the wildest weather that you've ever heard of,
where everyone is nicer, but it's never nice above.
Welcome to the farthest place you'll get from Disneyland.
Fish and chips and shipwrecks.
This is Newfoundland. Welcome to the Rock. An islander, I am an islander.
That morning, I'm in my car. The kids cross Airport Boulevard to get to school. And that time of day, people are in a little bit of a rush to get to work and stuff. So, normally, I sit there and run my radar. And if they're speeding, I'll stop them and write out a warning ticket. I'll write STFD. Slow the fuck down.
Welcome to the land where the winter strike to kill us. And we said,
we will not be killed.
Welcome to the land. The waters tried to drown us, and we said,
we will not be drowned.
Welcome to the land where we lost our loved ones, and we said,
we will still go on.
Welcome to the land where the wind tried to blow,
and we said no.
That morning I dropped my kids off at school and head to the SPCA, where I'm greeted by my other kids, all barking and meowing for breakfast and a belly rub. Not that I'm complaining, I love them. But by the time feeding is done, I got to get back to pick up my human kids, so I take just 1 second for myself and I'm sitting in my car.
I'm in the library.
I'm in the staff room.
And I turn on the radio.
You are here at the start of a moment on the edge of the world where the river meets the sea. Here on the edge of the Atlantic, on an island in between heaven and here.
I'm running my radar when Bonnie comes by. She pulls up and she is waving at me like mad. So I roll down my window and she says,
Oz, turn on the radio.
Slow it down.
Jesus H. Oz, turn on your radio.
Where our story starts.
It's my first day at the station.
Where we'll end the night.
I'm getting coffee for the picket line.
Where we know by heart.
5 minutes till my smoke break.
Every single flight.
I'm off to work at the airport.
Welcome to the fog. Welcome to the trees. To the ocean and the sky and whatever's in between. To the ones who've left, you never truly got. Our candles in the window and the kettle's always on. When the sun is coming up and the world is coming short. If you're hoping for a harbor, then you'll find an open door. In the winter from the water, through whatever's in the way. To the mountains who have come from away. Welcome to the Rock.
And you can head to Tauranga, to Bay Court Theatre, Tauranga Music Theatre, opening this week. It's a very short season, so don't miss out. Go and check it out. Have you seen the show before, Kristen?
I have not, and I only knew one of the songs because my goddaughter is a big theatre person, and so she has introduced me to all these musicals that came out that were more contemporary, and I fell in love with the song that we're going to play. Yet, I don't know if I could watch it. Might be a little bit too close for me.
It's told beautifully, and it's told from the angle of happiness, from very much of this kind town that just opened its door to literally thousands of people when 9/11 struck and all these planes had to land in Newfoundland to a town of Gander. And it's told, and it's the positive side of what happened for 9/11. It doesn't really it focuses, I guess, on the fact that they couldn't get a hold of their loved ones, and, of course, early cell phones were going back, you know, decades and decades, and things like none of the playing phones work, but there's just some absolute beautiful little gem stories. And there's hopefully a documentary coming out a little later this year as they're all meeting back there this September. All the people from the planes are going back to Gander this year for the big, is it 20, 25 years this year, big reunion. So yeah, really cool. I was really lucky to be down in Tauranga a few weeks ago for a rehearsal. We brought from Auckland, the wonderful Elias, who was on one of those planes, now lives here in New Zealand, and he just shared some beautiful stories. And again, just that, it's the positive side of what came out of a tragedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
But it's worth seeing, so go and support them. They've been working hard. Good luck to the fabulous Daryl and team down there. Welcome back. Nice to have you here.
It's always lovely to be here. I noticed that I am buying more and more tickets and seeing more and more things to just everything, reading more books from local writers, just appreciating everything
that's cool.
A little bit more. So thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Emma's on her way back from her big show in a week down in Invercargill, but I know that's gone well. This week I managed to catch Carrie at the Playhouse Theatre. Now, I am a NAPTA judge, so I can't say too much other than this is definitely worth going to see. And it's not a musical that's done very often, and we interviewed them here a few weeks ago, and they talked about some of the technical surprises to pull off, you know, Carrie setting fire to the place and things. Absolutely pulled that stuff off, so go and see it. It was really cool to stay at the end of the show and catch up with the leads, but we had to wait till they had a shower before they could come out, and I'll just let you ponder that thought of how the show ends, that the cast need to have a shower before you can see them.
I am going to go see it.
Yeah.
So you inspired me, and I thought, well, I better go see it too, because after I talked about, I watched the movie and blah, 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 and researched the original musical, that I had to put my money down.
Brilliant.
And go see it. I'm so excited.
And you snuck along to Anne Juliet again this week?
Yeah, two, and I have one more to go this week. It was so good. But seeing it with different people and being able to, you know, this time I'm bringing a friend of mine that we go and see a lot of shows together, so she's super excited, and we're at that age that the 90s music was so influential for us. So yeah, I'm seeing it again.
Brilliant.
So great.
Brilliant. Now, Kristen, if Harry Styles walked into the studio right now, would you be on his list to marry?
No, I don't. I think there's, you know what, I wouldn't
would
want to.
Would you put him on your list?
I wouldn't want to take him from what I imagine are some very big fans here. I do appreciate him there, you know, yet he might be a little young for me.
Oh, age is just a number, but, I'm sure these two are about to say. A massive welcome back to Nikki Perry and Kirsty Roby. Welcome to the show, this time to talk about your latest book, How to Marry Harry.
Thank you for having us.
Welcome back. Great to have you here. So, I mean, obviously the inspiration is Harry Styles himself, but what made you then decide, let's write this one?
Well, what happened was pre-lockdown, Nikki asked me if I wanted to go and see Harry. And I said, who's Harry?
Well, not him.
Yeah, so she made me listen to some music and look at some clips. And I went, I'll come with you.
And where was this? Where was he performing?
He
was going to come to New Zealand.
Right.
This was
pre-COVID.
This was beginning with 2020.
Yeah. But he didn't come.
Right.
So by the time he did get here, we were deep in the trenches of Harry Styles, and we'd written the book, and so of course we had to go to all the Australian shows and the New Zealand show.
All of them. So we did seven shows.
Mm. And so the book came about because then we hit lockdown. We decided we wanted to write a book, and we decided the book to write was what we knew, and we knew Harry Styles quite well by then. So it was all about two sisters who decide to follow Harry Styles around at his concerts with a cardboard cutout of one of their daughters to see if they can get him to marry her.
Right. And did you actually play the story out in real life?
Minus the cardboard cutout. Oh, damn, I was hoping that was true.
Okay.
I do have three daughters, but yeah, none of them volunteered to model for the cutout. So.
Do you think Harry knows that you are travelling the world spotting him at each of his concerts?
We did get a brief chance to chat to him in Melbourne at the concert. Yes.
Really? What was that like?
Amazing, except we were a little bit stunned mullets and stood there looking like idiots.
Was this just during the concert or what? Yes. Tell us more. What happened?
Well, when Harry was touring, he had forward pit areas that were called pods. So we thought, right, well, we've got these tickets for these pods. What are we going to do? What will we dress up as? We thought, well, yeah, we're quite similar. We'll go as two peas in the pod. So we had these big green costumes with peas on the front of them.
We looked ridiculous.
We looked crazy. There were all these other people dressed in lovely pink cowboy hats and their boas and their, you know, little boots and things. And we were these big green peas.
Were people like, what the heck actually went past?
They were actually, most of Harry's fans are probably a bit younger than us. They were actually lovely. They were really nice. They wanted to have photos with us, and they were nice, weren't they?
They were lovely. They were enthusiastic about the idea. Because if you hadn't purchased
a pod ticket and you were just in general admission and you saw you coming through the gates or something, you'd be a bit like, no, I don't get that. Yeah.
It was great fun, though. And I think when you dress up, you feel like a different person. Yeah, you don't care who sees you.
Totally.
You just have fun.
So what did he say?
So he said, he stopped in the middle of it and went, oh, you're dressed as peas. There's two of you. And then he proceeded to try and count how many peas we had in our pods, got it wrong. And we stood there trying to, you know, charade mime that we were peas in the pod. But I think maybe it escaped him.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
He got the number wrong too, yes. So we didn't really want to correct
Harry.
Him, so you can't count.
I love it.
So, but still, great moment, because we got to talk to him.
So back to the book. Who's it aimed at? What sort of age is this for?
Probably, when we wrote it, we were writing it about two sisters who are a similar age to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
In our 50s. I guess that was the target market that we were going with to start with. But there's also a point of view from a younger teenage boy, from the main character, Joe's daughter, Bailey, who was the cardboard cutout. There's a point of view from her as well. So...
And we've had some people, like men in their 70s, say, absolutely loved this book. So it seems to just appeal to certain people. It's a very quirky book, really. It's probably got a select audience.
Mm. But it was quite surprising, really, to find that there were people that enjoyed it that we hadn't considered our target audience. So I think we've been a bit careful, really, to not label what we think, who we think will enjoy the book.
And do you think this will get sort of picked up a little bit more internationally because of who it's based on, or do you have to be a little bit careful in the promos for that?
Well, I think we've got this new cover, especially for the competition, and that one has got Harry on it, and that may well appeal to the Harry fans. It's a very beautiful picture of him.
Brilliant. Aww. We'll talk about the competition a little later on.
And so you went on this concert tour. This isn't the first time you've done some kind of mad capers, is it? Seems like the two of you, this might be something that you've been cooking up for a while. Or
I think
this
two
book
are just
is very
total mischief.
Yeah, total like very autobiographical.
Well, a little bit autobiographical.
we've done a lot of crazy trips. We like a good museum, so we've seen funeral museums and old medical museums, and anything that's a little bit different, we'll go to
funeral museums.
Yes.
Oh, Houston's got the most fabulous funeral
really?
Museum.
Yeah.
Okay, from Harry Styles to funeral museums.
Yeah, well, I think these guys
are interesting tour guides.
So
I think they had JFK's
okay.
coffin and the car that took him out as well.
Okay, no, I don't dress. Carry on.
But yes, we'll happily dress up for any occasion. Mm. We've dressed up as Red Bulls. We've dressed up as cockatoos. Anything, really. Well, anything goes. Nothing better than having a dress up.
So it's just opening your closet and saying, who can we be today?
Pretty much.
Love that. And then, do you embarrass your daughters? Do you do stuff where you're like calling them out and, you know, what do they think of all this?
Kirsty's kids are pretty good. They can't really, you can't really embarrass
them. My kids don't get embarrassed. No.
Yeah. But my daughters just sort of keep their distance. They're not. They don't know me.
So remind our listeners, how long have you two been writing together?
We've been writing since 2020. Harry was actually our first book.
Oh, really?
And we have written 7 books. Another one we will bring out next year.
So when you say your first book, you've just released it now over this time, or is this a re-release?
This is a re-release with the new cover, especially for the competition that we're running.
So you saw Harry coming back down under and you went, great, this is good, let's
Harry's
hit him again.
Harry's back in town. So.
Yes. Brilliant, dust off the peas, yep.
Oh, and then, so what do you hope with this book? Like, you said that it's a surprising audience that might be picking it up. And besides meeting Harry, I'm sure, like, what do you really hope this message to bring to people, not just women of your age, but, you know, possibly young adults or older avid readers?
I think we would like because we're giving away tickets, we would like to give people an opportunity to go and see Harry, that maybe they haven't been able to do that. We've been really lucky. We're really fortunate that we've been able to go to all these concerts. It would be really cool if one of his fans was able to win tickets and get to go and see him as well. That would be neat.
And really just bring Harry to more people.
Yeah.
And
then
long term, the goal is somebody says, we'd love to make this book into a movie, and Harry will play himself, and we will have little bit parts.
Mm. Well, even if he can't play himself, you know, he might sing live some tracks for you, you know, get the backings done. Yeah.
Well, he has acted in a few things, so maybe he'll want to.
Oh, I love it.
Have a little part.
He does show up from time to time. Mm. Okay, so who is the big sister, or are you
Nikki's the big sister.
You're the big sister. Oh, I love
We do get often, are you twins, which is a bit insulting because there's quite a big age gap between us. Never mind.
Kirsty's always quick to jump in and say that she's the younger one.
But like we were talking about before the show, it's that art brings out the young person in everyone, so it does kind of bring the two of you together, you know, but more of like we're all digging into our whimsical side, our, you know, our younger side, and so that it isn't.
Yeah, and I think write, the older you are, the more you've got to write about. Mm. But also meeting all these Harry fans, and it has kept us young. It's kept us really enthusiastic for the quirky and the strange and the exciting things in life that you think that maybe of your past. And then you realise as you get older and your kids grow up that you kind of have your life back again and you can do all these mad things.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I'm a great believer of that. Do you have the next Harry? Like, who is the next person you might write about? And, like, this could be quite a regular theme if you're clever.
Because you have three daughters and you have kids. Mm. So
we use any excuse to do a trip. Mm-hmm. Our next book is set in the UK, so of course we had to go over to the UK. We went to Wales to the Hay on Wye Book Festival, and then we went round Somerset and did a little tour, and then we got on a canal boat, and all in the purpose of research, of course. Mm. Yes.
So then we came back and thought, well, we've got to put this into a book now, don't we, to make it.
And when do you hope to release that one?
That'll come out next year, I think. Yes.
How long is the process start to finish when you're self-publishing like this, writing, publishing it, that whole works?
Generally about 9 months to a year.
Okay.
So having a baby.
See twins.
The weird creepy twin thing. Stereo.
Brilliant. All right, we'll take a music break. So we're playing one of your favourite newbies, Coming Up Roses. Why do you like this one?
It's just a beautiful song.
It's his best song yet.
It's his best. Let's hope Harry's tuned in. Here's a little bit of Coming Up Roses.
Tell me your fears. Turn like the clocks, it's that time of year. If we stay the course, we could get it right. But I'm not devoid of an appetite. And everything seems to be coming up roses, but I'm scared if we're both right. Does that mean we're not aligned? Just for tonight, let's go hangover chasing. And I'll talk your ear off about why it's safe as I fumble my words and fall flat on my face through the truth. Just say the word and we'll take up the test where we flirt with the bad ones and skip all the rest. But we see out the night with your head on my chest, me and you. There's only me and you. Now I see your tears on account of my wants, and now it appears that I'm feeling guilty and worried, dear, that you think that I might not want you here. Does all of this seem to be bringing us closer? Am I backseat in your life, judging while you drive? Just for tonight, let's go hangover chasing. And I'll talk your ear off about why it's safe as I fumble my words and fall flat on my face through the truth. Just say the word and we'll take up the test where we flirt with the bad ones and skip all the rest. But we see out the night with your head on my chest, me and you. There's only me and you.
Coming up, roses. Now, speaking of coming up, roses, these two have got a fabulous little competition happening with the launch of their relaunch of their book. So tell us, how can people go into them? What's involved? What's the story?
All you have to do is buy a copy of How to Marry Harry, which you can do from our website, NikkiPerryandKirstyRoby.com. Or you can get it from Enamored Books in Remuera Road.
Brilliant. And once they purchase the book, what do they have to do to enter?
They'll get a form to fill in the form, tell us whether you want to go to Sydney or Melbourne, and
post it back to us.
Fantastic. So you're not doing flights and stuff, it's just the tickets
just
to the
just
show?
Tickets.
Do they have to dress up as peas to go with you?
They do not have
Are
to.
Are you seated with them? Do they get to be with you as well?
No. We're doing the Sydney shows, not the Melbourne shows.
Okay.
So we're being very restrained.
Yeah.
And it's not the same night, I don't think.
Okay.
So,
One night is.
That's cool.
But the tickets for each show are for two people, so they can take a friend.
Oh, fantastic. Now, to add to that, into the mix, we've got a book to give away, which includes an entry into the draw. So look out on our socials this week. Emma will be on to that tomorrow. So keep an eye out on our socials. We're going to run it for a couple of weeks and draw it in 2 weeks' time. And you can take the book away and then enter the competition.
Yep. And we're also doing a little event at Enamored in Remuera, the Enamored bookstore, which is a romance bookstore. Fabulous bookstore. It's gorgeous. On Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. So if anybody wants to come along to Enamored, we'll put on some drinks and nibbles and you can get a copy of the book there.
Ooh, that's cool. That's very cool. When you know, you mentioned before about going to Europe and obviously Harry and other books that we've talked about in the past, like, what makes you then sit down and sort of work out the next theme? What drives that context? Like, post the next book, are you already talking about what it might be?
Yes, always. We're always plotting books and coming up with ideas. And often it's just something we've read or a little quirky idea that pops into your head. And then you think, wouldn't that be interesting if the two people met that way? Or there's something that sparks it. And then we have to decide, is there a book in it?
Mm-hmm. Have you got some that have never made it off the cutting room floor? Where do you start writing and then go,
We've got many ideas that don't come to fruition.
They don't normally get to the writing stage. We talk over the ideas for weeks and weeks beforehand. So some of them don't make it. Or some of them might get reshuffled into something else later.
Yeah.
But we come up with lots of ideas and some of them are just, frankly, they just wouldn't work.
All the rubbish, yeah.
Now, I know we've talked about this before, but remind our listeners. So writing together, that style, how does it work? Like, does one sort of lead the book and the other one edits and tweaks? Or are you writing different chapters? Or do you literally sit together with a glass of red wine, which for some reason I can picture you two doing, and typing it together?
That would be dangerous.
We actually
don't write in the same room. Ooh. We do a lot of plotting together. Nikki's just moved up to Auckland, so now we spend more time together plotting. We used to do a lot of phone conversations. Now we get together, we plot, we have our storyboard and we write everything down and then we start outlining chapters and that takes us the longest.
Okay.
And then when we're ready to write, one of us will just start and then when that person runs out of steam, the next person just takes over. So it could be mid-chapter, it could be one or two chapters in.
So do you ever read what the previous person's written and go, no, sorry, you've gone off track here, I don't like this? Like, how flexible are you, or is it kind of honouring the process a bit?
We would be flexible. I think if one of us didn't like something, the other one would agree that, well, probably just rewrite it, actually.
but it doesn't really happen, does it?
No, we don't.
We
normally do agree. In fact, it works the opposite way. Usually the other person will write something and you go, that's great, I wouldn't have thought of that, but that's really good. And that's given me an idea now of what I would like to do. So, yeah, that's how it normally works.
So we're lucky because we share a brain. So.
Yeah. Oh, but they're not twins.
But you did say that, did you already talk about this, that you were I just had to excuse myself for a minute, which is why if I ask a question, did you already say that you just have relocated to Auckland to be nearer your sister?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, not just for that reason.
She might have a different story. That's
because we're so codependent. We have to be close.
What tips and tricks would you give to new young writers today, sort of wanting to go down the self-publishing route?
I'd say don't be scared to give it a go, but take courses, learn as much as you can about the writing process as well as the publishing process. Mm-hmm. Talk to other people that have done it.
But yeah, I think courses, take a course and read. Read a lot. You can't write if you don't read.
Yep.
Are you planning to do more in the digital space? Like, is that sort of the way to go now with the Kindles and the ebooks and all of that?
We do ebooks, but we are quite technologically challenged, so it's not our forte.
Not your thing?
No. We are hoping to do an audio book, but that's
something for future. Harry reading his own.
Harry, if you're out there, would you read our book, please?
Come on.
Harry.
There must be someone listening with a contact.
I'd probably never listen to anything else.
Yeah, imagine that. Well, he could be clever and at the end of each chapter play one of his songs.
Yes.
I'll be back with the next chapter after everything's coming up roses or whatever it was. Yeah, okay.
And then turn it into a musical and then you can go back and talk about that.
Anyone would like to turn our book into a musical and they know Harry, please get in touch.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So what's next? You've got your Europe book. What's next on the horizon for you two?
Well, we're doing a screenwriting play at the moment because Nikki came up with this quite weird and wonderful idea for a TV show, but sort of just a filling in time while we're thinking about other books, really. So we'll see.
Do you set certain limits or goals on, you know, we must produce X amount a week or X amount a month?
No, definitely not.
No? No. It's just as it comes?
Yep.
Definitely. Yep. We're not nearly organised enough for that.
Oh, you hear about people that do that, that they say, I have to sit down and I've got to write 5,000 words a week or I've got to do 3 hours a day. That just wouldn't work for us, I think.
Now, last time you were on the show, it was a children's book.
It was, the Easter book.
The Easter book. And how did that go?
We just finished doing the Easter show. We were very lucky we got a little spot in the Easter show, and it was fantastic, but it was felt like a very long days. And but it was fun. It was really good. I'm glad to put it to bed now, but it was great fun.
Great. Well, your lovely basket got won by one of our listeners down in Tauranga, who's involved in Tauranga Music Theatre, not come from away, but is Susie part of the team for Wicked?
Full circle.
Well, it went all the way back down. So that's so cool. That is so cool. When you are writing a book and you sort of, you know, you're formulating your plan, how do you work out how much is too much or how much is not enough?
It's usually not enough for us. We tend to write too short.
Okay.
We always, when we edit, have to add more because we, weirdly enough, because we talk a lot, we end up running short and having to bulk it up.
I think for us, though, that works better because if we did a really long, rambling book, the way that we talk, it would be a lot harder to condense that. It's a lot easier to go through and think, hey, look, we didn't really say much about this, or we need to add this in, or this wasn't clear. It's a lot easier to add things in afterwards, I think.
Mm. Is it the same with the children's books? Like, do you prefer one over the other, or both the same? It brings out different parts of you, like...
The children's books are more of something I used to do when my kids were little, and they are just sort of in-between book projects for me. So I much prefer writing the rom-coms. They're great fun. We have so much fun doing it. We get to do so many things we would never have thought we would be doing. You know, when we first wrote Harry, who would have thought we'd be sitting here doing this? Mm-hmm. So, they are our passion.
I think when you were writing those books when your kids were younger too, you said, oh, I'd love to have a book. You never actually thought that you would. Mm. So doing those children's books is kind of like full circle for you, isn't it, to get that dream done? But we never realized, we never thought that we could possibly be doing what we're doing now, so...
Do you let somebody read and kind of not edit, but give feedback before you do your final, or is it like, nah, it's just us? Like,
no, we do. We do.
Yeah, we've got a few very trusted people that we give the books to, that tell us what they would take out or add, and that's great. It's, you know, because otherwise we just blow smoke up our own bums and say, oh, well, this is amazing, wouldn't we? Yeah. So we have to have someone who brings us down to a sensible level and tells us it needs a bit more or bits of something else.
And do you have a vast interest in books, like not just rom-coms and children's books? Like, do you read all kinds of, and does that help kind of even then be able to focus on rom-com because you can pull from so many different genres?
I don't tend to read rom-coms because if I do, I feel like it changes my style and my voice.
Okay.
I read quite dark books a lot of the time and like gloomy, depressing things, and that's my kind of book.
I don't
weirdly.
I read the odd rom-com, but no, I don't either, generally. But I think when we are writing, I read a lot less than I normally do. Because you're already in, it's in your head. You don't want to be confused with something else.
Yeah. Clutter it up.
And it's quite time consuming, and it does take over whatever we're doing when we're writing. That's about all we can think about.
Who's inspired you from an author point of view, and whether that's a writer or a course that you've done or something, who's been sort of your inspiration?
Besides Harry.
Gigi Fenster is one of my favourite New Zealand authors. She wrote The Good Winter, which is a very great, gloomy, dark book. I love it. we've met some really interesting people. We've met Witi Ihamara and we've met Monty Suter and lots of really amazing people when we've gone to talks. That's always really exciting and inspiring.
And they're always really encouraging.
And that's something we seem to see on the show. Mind you, that's an arts thing in general. People support and encourage others.
It's not a closed door situation.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right, remind people, where can they get your books, follow you, find out more, and win, hopefully, two tickets to go and see Harry Styles either in Sydney or Melbourne?
So either come along to Enamored on Wednesday night, or you can look at our website, or follow us on Instagram. We're Write Doozy, W-R-I-T-E, Write Doozy, and you can get all our information from there. Buy the book.
Brilliant. And Emma will pop it up on our socials this week, so check us out on Facebook and Instagram, where you can go into the draw to win your own copy of the book. I have it here in my hot little hands, which also includes the postcard entry into the draw. Hey, thanks so much for stopping by once again. We always love checking in with you, and we'll look forward to hearing or seeing your next book on our trip around Europe.
Thank you so much for having us.
Awesome. And Kristen mentioned at the beginning her favourite song from Come From Away is Me and the Sky, so here it is.
Must have thought they had a crazy kid, 'cause I was one of those kids who always knew what I wanted. They took me down to the airport to see all the planes depart, and watching them fly, something inside of me was starting. I was 8 when I told them that I'd be a pilot, but I was too young, too short, and there were no female captains. And my dad said, be patient, he said, just see what happens. But I took my first lesson, came down from the sky, and told my father I'd fly for the rest of my life. And I got my first job flying for a mortician in a tiny bonanza, just a corpse and me. $5 an hour for flying dead bodies. I had to climb over their faces just to get to my seat. And suddenly the wheels lift off, the ground is falling backwards. I am suddenly alive. Suddenly I'm in the cockpit. Suddenly everything's changed. Suddenly I'm not too young or too short, and the passengers in the back don't complain. Hey lady, hey baby, hey, why don't you grab us a drink? And the flight attendants weren't my friends back then, and they said, are you better than us, do you think? But I kept getting hired, and the World War II crew, they retired, and the girls all thought much higher of me. 1986, the first female American captain in history. Can get their own drinks. Suddenly there's no one to say it. Stay grounded, looking down, passing them by. Suddenly there's nothing in between me and the sky. Suddenly I've got an all-female crew. The news caught and made headlines across the world. Suddenly it stopped. No one's saying you can't, or you won't, or you know you're not. And we're putting pins on the map where we've flown. Suddenly I am a mother, and suddenly shocked at how much they've grown. Suddenly I'm wondering how my parents
Suddenly I'm in a hotel. Suddenly something has died. Suddenly there's something in between me and the
beautiful song, Me in the Sky, from Come From Away. All the best to our friends at Tauranga Music Theatre opening that this week. Go and support them at the beautiful Bay Court Theatre. Now, from Harry Styles, that was definitely a different angle for the book than usual, to now a very different style of music. And I'm absolutely delighted to welcome back to Kick Arts, Hannah Jostensen. Welcome to the show, Hannah.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's great to have you, and you've had a very busy day. We just talked before we went on air. You did an interview this morning for Radio New Zealand at 8:40, and you're ending the day at 8:40 with an interview for Kick Arts.
Yeah, the perfect bookend, eh?
Isn't it? Look, lovely to have you back. And you've been busy since we last caught up. And, you know, for our listeners, you're Wellington and Norwegian songwriter. Wellington is home these days?
Yeah. Wellington's been home for about 20 years. I came out in 2004. Yeah, over 20 years.
Wow. And when did sort of music first kick off for you? What inspired you?
I mean, I've always been singing. I started playing trumpet, really, in the school wind band or the orchestra. And then as I got a bit older, I started joining choirs, and especially as a student. Yeah, that's when I really got into a cappella choirs, like large classical, but also show choirs. But writing was probably university age. It was around 2009 when I really started writing my own songs in English.
And what sort of inspires you for each song? Where do you, you know, what do you look for, I guess, in life to write each of these tracks?
So, you know, like for many of us, I guess, it's the people and the places. But I mean, this particular EP, The Lighthouse, that has a bit of a mix. I mean, the title track is very much related to my, you know, Whakapapa, where I come from. The lighthouse is a specific lighthouse.
Okay.
So that's a tribute to where I grew up. My granddad was a lighthouse keeper.
Oh.
And I grew up on a tiny little island, way out in the middle of nowhere, really, off the northwest coast of Norway. So it's a tiny rock. There were three in our class, no cars when I grew up. Yeah, it's really quite, it's the end stop. But that lighthouse, you know, in such an environment where it's rough weather, fishing was the main industry, the lighthouse was a really significant institution. And, like, it's the place you'd go to when you went for an evening walk or, yeah. So I have this strong connection to that through my granddad, and my dad grew up in the lighthouse. And I grew up just down from it. So, I mean, that's kind of the anchorage of the whole EP.
Yeah.
And it was just natural for me that became the title track.
I was always fascinated as a child by lighthouses. I used to love the books, The Lighthouse Keeper, as a child. Just such an interesting concept of a place to live and the importance that the lighthouse served.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, I was reading up a little bit actually online here the other day, and this hadn't registered with me, but like my granddad, he was working on a different lighthouse for a little while. He lived on my island, but he had a stint over somewhere else. But his, you know, his family, his wife, she was pregnant, and she was having, you know, going into labor, but get to her from his lighthouse because of bad weather. So he lost both of them. He lost his wife and the child. So, you know, like, it's just, there's all these stories and layers to this. Yeah, so it felt that was a very personal kind of song to write. And I talked about this today as well on RNZ. I had to do that really respectfully because it's not just my story. And the way I kind of worked around that was I gave the lighthouse the voice. And I imagine what the lighthouse would have seen. So it's a conversation between the lighthouse kind of and the sea, and reflections. Yeah.
So how come now? How come you're writing this song about the lighthouse now?
So I did release my first EP back in 2013. And after that, I took a long break. I was just busy with two kids and work and all of that. And then Lighthouse came up quite soon after, well, when I got back into writing again. And I think it's probably, you know, as I get older, I think more and more about connections and people and places and where I come from. And, yeah, similarities. And, yeah, I don't know. Now, it just came.
That's the right time.
Probably sitting with me for quite a while. Yeah,
I love that you're respectful of the stories. I think sometimes people don't really have that compassion to say, you know, you still want to share your feelings about it, but you're being very, very respectful for it.
We talked about that this morning too because I did go back to Norway in 2024. And this particular song actually took me probably years to write. It matured for a long time. And part of that was because, it was an important song and it needed to be, needed to feel right. But we went back to Norway and we went to my island, my lighthouse island. You know, that I have a cousin there, but it's not kind of where we tend to go anymore. But we went out there. I gave my first and so far only concert in Norway at the island, and there's just 50 people living there now, but the church was full. There was just 60 people in there. It was absolutely amazing. And I think they came out of respect for, you know, for my my dad and and me. It was a beautiful, beautiful moment, and I remember I was really nervous because I wondered how they'd receive the song. But it was just such a wonderful experience, and I felt like they were okay with me, you know, performing and recording and releasing this song. Even the people, there were people in the room who had lost loved ones, you know, in the waters outside. And they were the ones I kind of, I just didn't want them to get a shock or.
Yeah,
right.
And I mean, I haven't talked to all of them, but I talked to representatives. So I talked to people who, could kind of talk with Mama, you know, for others. So that's kind of that inspiration. But there are other songs, and actually on that, another trip home from Norway to New Zealand, Wildflower, which is one of the songs, that's based on a chance meeting on an airplane with, you know, between three of us who'd never, I'd never met this couple before, and that made such an impression on me that I wrote Wildflower about it. So I think, yeah, it's people, it's places, but it could also be, you know, other people's experiences. Sometimes it's a word, you know, but they're all kind of personal, not necessarily all autobiographical, but, you know, yeah.
Brilliant. Now, your tracks themselves have an amazing orchestral sound. Talk to us about how important that has been for this particular EP.
Sorry, what was your question?
Your tracks have a beautiful orchestral sound behind them.
Yeah.
Why have you, you know, why is it so important to your style of music?
And how do you find the people you collaborate with? Because you're doing it across both countries.
I love classical music, and I think this is probably a bit of my background too, you know, playing in school orchestras and singing in classical choirs with big orchestral arrangements too, although my choirs were a cappella. So I'm kind of drawn to that. I love the cello. I love the strings. I mean, Susan Fullerton Smith, who plays viola on Paula Knight, she's, you know, a really close friend of mine. Jane Daly on cello, she's a local friend of mine. Both of them play in Orchestra Wellington. So, you know, they're professional players. They're just amazing. Yeah, and also I guess the percussion, it's not a drum kit on this EP, it's percussion, which is also kind of taking me back to orchestras where you have timpanis and you have handheld, you know, like handheld instruments rather than a drum kit. So, and that was with, so it's Andreas Lepper who plays percussion, and I met him... I met Andreas via governance, actually, for Wellington Music Centre, which is a ministry-funded after-school-hours kind of music programme. It's offering affordable music lessons, group lessons to kids at primary school age. And we were together on the board of that, and he tutors, and it's just amazing. I just really wanted, you know, we talked about working together, so when this project kind of came up, I was really keen to have Andreas on board, so the arrangements partially come out from taste, but also was thinking about who are the people I want to work with, and you know, and what are their strengths and what are their expertise, and it kind of, yeah, it just became this beautiful mix that way.
Oh, well, I cannot wait to hear the song. So, yeah, are we ready for
let's
it?
Let's take a listen. So thank you so much for chatting to us tonight. If you're ever in Auckland, we'd love to have you in studio for a longer interview. You've got...
coming up to Auckland.
Good, good. So get in touch. We'd love to have you in here and play some more music. But right now we're going to play The Lighthouse. Where can people go to follow you and grab your music?
Also, I'm on Bandcamp. And also on social media under Hanne Songs, Hanne Songs. I'm on all the platforms. So just search up The Lighthouse and Hanne and it should pop up.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for chatting to us tonight on Kick Arts. You've had a long day. Time now to have that cup of tea. And here is The Lighthouse.
Thank you.
I will. way back to the shore from the grave. I'm the lighthouse, the lighthouse, and I will lead you home. I'm the lighthouse, ooh, the lighthouse, and I will lead you.
Lighthouse, Hannah Johansson. Very different sort of vibe to that music.
That was beautiful. So, and comparing it to Harry Styles, where his was very much lullaby and very, you know, had a bit of that classical and really, you know, a lovely sound, and this as well, but very different. Mm. I don't, you know, it's and it's energizing, right? I could feel that. The energy of the lighthouse and that small island.
So beautiful, her telling that story. The whole, imagine a whole, your generation, your previous generation, all living on a lighthouse or in front of it.
I really hope she gets to Auckland and you can talk to her longer.
I love
because
the going to school with a class of three.
Yeah
that was your whole school life.
Mm.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Very cool. Wow, we've got some mix tonight. Come from away, a bit of Harry Styles, some authors and some lighthouses, and now we're going to murder people on the Nile because it's time to catch up with our favourite friends and regular sponsors of the show from Dolphin Theatre. Good evening and welcome back, Emma. Lovely to have you here.
Hi, thanks very much. It's nice to be back.
And you're back directing again?
Yes, for my sons. Just back after directing at the end of last year, like Mr. Tom, so straight onto it again.
And well done with that one. What an outstanding show.
Thank you.
And now we're murdering people on the Nile with a bit of Agatha Christie.
We sure
are. That's quite different to Goodnight, Mr. Tom.
Yeah, hugely different. Different for me. It's not normally my kind of genre, but I did want to challenge myself a little bit, and I'm certainly doing that.
Brilliant. And who have you brought along today? Some cast?
Yeah, I've got James and Viola, who are both in the show. Can't tell you if they're guilty or not, or if they survive.
Good old Agatha Christie. Yeah. Okay, Viola, who do you play?
I play Jacqueline de Sévérac.
Oh, and with a name like that, is she quite posh?
Well, she was raised posh, but unfortunately she's dropped from her status recently, so at the moment she's a little bit down in the dumps.
Ah.
Yeah.
And have you done an Agatha Christie before yourself?
I have not.
So how are you finding it as an actor with the script?
I love it because I'm like a Shakespeare kind of person, so I love old language, I love long bits of text, you know, so this is my jam.
Okay, yeah. Okay, that's cool. All right, James, what about you? Is it your jam? Have you done some Agatha Christie before?
I do have a couple under my belt.
Okay.
I've previously done The Mousetrap and Then There Were None up with Shoreside at the Pump House.
Where did you do Mousetrap?
Shoreside Theatre did
A
few years ago, the 70th anniversary up at the Pump House Theatre on the Shore.
Brilliant. And who do you play?
So in this one, I play Simon Mostyn, who is definitely not as posh as Jacqueline, but he's, I guess I'd say he comes from a very, very working class background, and he's, part of the story is he's married into wealth.
Okay.
So he's definitely reaching very, very much in his relationship with his wife, Kay. And a lot of people hold different opinions about how worthy he is of being in that relationship. Mm-hmm. And they're very vocal about that as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Emma, tell our listeners, what's the general plot and storyline?
Oh, right. Well, it's, the typical sort of Agatha Christie trope. Lots of different people in different kind of place. So this time they're all on a boat on the Nile. And, of course, there's a murder that goes on there. I think people are just going to have to come along and see it. It's a little bit different to the book and different again to the movie. So, yeah, there's a few surprises in there.
Okay. And are there things that you feel you're doing that's going to make it a little different if people have seen it before?
I hope so, yeah. I'm not ever been a huge fan of sort of parlour plays, so we've really built the boat, and the boat is something that the characters really get to interact with, and being out on the Nile, and, you know, we've sort of tried to bring a little bit of that outside in for people. So, yeah, hopefully it's a little bit different.
But you always have good sets at the Dolphin.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, it's a huge strength. Kristen and I headed along to your recent show, which was done in the foyer, which was really cool to experience something very different. Did you all catch it?
I only got to see a bit of the rehearsals.
Right.
Simultaneous rehearsals.
Oh, okay. That was very cool. Every bright thing, was that the
every
right?
Every brilliant thing?
Brilliant thing, yeah. Mm. Very cool. What, as actors, are you loving about doing an Agatha Christie? Do you think it still stands the test of time?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a reason that Agatha Christie is almost being treated like the new Roger Hall, in that if you really want to put on a show that people come out in droves to see, it used to be always Roger Hall's. Roger Hall's still very, very popular. But now you're seeing Agatha Christie almost getting a resurgence, and especially with younger generations. And I'm going to throw out and say, I think Knives Out and the Rian Johnson films have definitely sort of brought that back and thinking murder mysteries are fun. Was it Daniel Craig playing Benoit Blanc, who's almost like a modern-day Texan Poirot?
Yeah.
It's sort of reigniting a lot of fun and how these murder mysteries, they're serious stories, but they're not dark, miserable Scandinavian crime dramas sort of thing. They've got a lot of levity and a lot of fun. And what makes them really enjoyable is you have your central character, whether it's a Marple or a Poirot, or in this case, Canon Pennyfather is the version of Poirot in this story, and you have a whole lot of fun character performances that revolve around them.
Right.
And those characters can range from incredibly silly, entertaining performances all the way down to equally serious that counter with the main character as well, and that creates a really fun dynamic.
Ooh, that's cool. So where are you at the rehearsal process? Starting to get into runs now, getting close to opening.
Yeah, we're getting into runs. We've just we had to cut our rehearsal short today to come and be on the show. It's our pleasure. But yeah, we're running in tech today, so we're getting to the pointy end of everything now. Yep. Yeah, it's starting to look really good.
Brilliant. And how many in the cast?
11.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you compare, you know, you're working on something like Goodnight, Mr. Tom, and something like this, how do you as a director hit reset and kind of go, okay, brand new journey?
That is such a good question. I'm not working with children and puppets this time, so that's a good start.
Yeah,
it is a reset, I guess, because two such different plays, and the people that I'm working with are different, you know, in this. Most of the people in Murder on the Nile are very experienced, talented actors. Not that they weren't wonderfully talented in Goodnight, Mr. Tom, but, you know, we were working with younger, more inexperienced people, so it's been really lovely to see what they've actually brought to the table, because they've certainly contributed a whole lot of really interesting stuff.
Wow. So, Viola, so this is the first time you're doing a play like this. What do you usually do? Like, what's your...
I will do any play that I can do, but in terms of what I've done in the last few years, it's been a lot of Shakespeare, because I'm a big fan, and actually the last show I did at Dolphin was also a murder mystery. It was Clue, so that's kind of like the comedy version of an Agatha Christie murder mystery.
Yeah, it is.
So I guess anywhere... honestly, any play that has a lot of drama, that seems to be where I go.
So it wasn't a hard like entry to say, oh, they're doing Mirror on the Nile, I'm in. It wasn't, you didn't have to be convinced, it wasn't something, you're not totally green on it because you have done a few.
Yeah, for sure.
How fantastic. Well, what about you, James, now coming back to another one of these plays, how does it feel? You get to do, because And Then There Are None is so good, and now you get to do another one. Like, these are so juicy.
They are very, very juicy. I tend to find myself really enjoying them because they're character performances more than anything, and every single character you can really, really dig into, regardless of size or regardless of their role in the story. There's always a huge, really rich backstory you can dig into. A lot you can pull out, and a lot you can bring to your interpretation of the character as well. So you could see two different casts do the exact same play, and they're going to bring a very different thing to how they believe those characters would all interact within the context of the story.
Wow. And Emma, how do you feel about that, where people are bringing in their own twist? Because, and maybe because there are these special surprises, it kind of goes with that?
Oh, I absolutely love it. It's just making it far more exciting. And I'm thinking, God, why didn't I think of that? But they really are bringing in some really cool stuff. Yeah.
And what has been the most challenging for you to take on a bit like this?
The most challenging? I've never worked on a mystery before, and I guess it's marking the clues and just thinking about it in a different way, and how the audience are going to relate, what they're going to sort of end up with, you know. Oh, that's why that happened, you know. But they've got to actually understand the, you know, the clues that are coming along. Yeah, so, yeah, that's been a challenge for me.
Yeah. The one thing I like about Agatha Christie is she did put clues in, right? The same thing with Sherlock Holmes, because some of these modern mysteries, they come out of nowhere, and you're like, it's like I read a lot of mystery, just like obsessed with it, and I notice that the new ones, the contemporary ones, those murders or those clues, because I go back and look, right? That's how nerdy I am. It's like, they never mentioned those. So it's refreshing. I'm glad to be like, oh, there's going to be clues, and it's going to be, you know.
You're going to be sitting there, because we're going together. You're going to be sitting there jibbing me, aren't you, going, I've worked it out, it's this person.
No, I'm very serious about my mysteries. So, you know, I'm in the zone.
Okay. All right.
Observing everything. What's that person doing?
They bring a notebook. Write down all the possible clues.
That's what I would do.
Ooh, brilliant. All right, we're going to take a music break. Then we're going to catch up on this team's, their fabulous arts journey that's led up to the show. It's Mother's Day coming up here in New Zealand, but it's already started around the world. I know it was Mother's Day in Nepal yesterday. And Adele, Celine Dion, and Rihanna, what a combo.
Oh my goodness.
Have put a track together called Mother's Love.
Hush now, don't you cry. By your side, even when the world feels cold, you're never alone. I remember little hands in mine, tiny footsteps right beside. Didn't know how strong I'd be until you needed me. Sleepless nights and silent prayers, every burden I would bear, if it meant you'd never feel the weight I had to heal. And if the storm comes crashing down, I'll be a shelter safe and sound. That's a mother's love, strong enough to break. Just to see you smile.
smile one day. If I could take your pain from you, there's nothing I wouldn't do. Even when you walk away, my love will always stay. Through every fear, through every scar, I love you just the way you are. That's a mother's love.
Mother's Love, Adele, Celine Dion, Rihanna, beautiful song, very beautiful music video that goes with it, quite emotional, beautiful song for Mother's Day. My mum turned 90
on Thursday. Happy birthday, mum.
90, so that's a good song. There we go, mum. But we're not here to talk about mothers tonight, that's in a few weeks' time. Tonight, talking about your aunt's journey now, Viola. So what first kicked it off for you? Are you going to take us back to a nativity play like our previous weeks?
Oh, I'm afraid to disappoint. It was not a nativity play, but I first got the taste of the stage when I was like 3 years old doing ballet performances.
Nice.
And I just loved it, and I wanted to keep doing that for the rest of my life, so I did. And I did all the kids' like drama classes. I did all the kids' holiday programs. We got to perform every community theatre show I could get into once I was high school age. And it just hasn't stopped. So that's my origin story.
Nice.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
And you said you've been to a performance every week this year.
Yes. It averages out that way. Some weeks I've seen three, and so if there's a week where I've had to miss one, it kind of averages out.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's a great
thing. Awesome.
You do the art and you support the art.
Yeah, that's what we want. All right, James, take us back then. Are you going back to when you were three?
Not quite that far.
No?
I have to follow that level of commitment, which is a challenge. My arts journey is a bit strange, I guess, because I've never gone to like university to study acting or study theatre or drama school or anything like that. I've just done theatre performances going all the way back to when I was growing up in Dunedin, and then I moved to Wellington and I kept doing them there, and now I've moved up to Auckland and I've kept doing them there. And it's just come from looking for opportunities across community theatres, whatever city I'm in, finding plays that I really like, and then you just start making connections, start making networks, making friends, and then you continue to do more and more shows. And I guess I'm okay at doing them, I think, because I'm still doing them. Or no one's told me that I should stop.
Well, not only that, but you're doing the do as well, right? Knowing that it's not just about the performance, it's about the people and the connections and building that network. That's a great inspiration of that. It's not just what happens up on the stage, it's all that other, which is, you know, probably why the artists are supporting each other, because they're out meeting and greeting each other.
Well, even in the case of this one, Emma and I have wanted to work together for several years now.
Yes,
and
yeah.
Emma's had a few different shows that I would have loved to audition for, but for whatever reason, I wasn't in the city. I think Emma's show a couple of years ago, Things I Know to Be True, there was a role in that that I really, really wanted to do. And then I had to go to my brother's wedding during the season. So unfortunately, I couldn't.
So inconvenient.
Yeah.
I know. So we hold that over my brother at the moment.
Sure.
And then, no, this one finally worked out timing-wise.
Nice. And Emma, has it always been directing, or are you from the stage more? Where do you sit?
From the stage, my family are all actors, so I started off at about 5 years old and haven't really stopped. So, it's been a huge family thing, and of course it's just growing, and yeah, I've done it all over as often as I can. And yeah, it's about the friendships and relationships you build, really. Everyone's so, you know, everyone's different, but, you know, so many similarities. So, that's a huge part of it, I think.
Did you do the same kind of theater or acting that your family did, or did you kind of go off on tangents?
Well, my brother's a professional actor, so I've definitely not gone there. similarities. He was an Agatha Christie last year, he was doing it. It's part of the reason I thought I'd give it a shot.
Older brother?
No, he's my baby brother.
Oh, I would say I did anything my older brothers did, so I can see definitely that happening.
And are you more enjoying the directing side now than the acting, or do you like to flip between both?
It's a really good question. I think both offer really different things. Like acting, creatively you've got a chance to sort of bring a whole character into the world, and you have fun. It seems to be more of a team sport than directing. Directing's pretty lonely. It can get quite stressful, but ultimately it's really satisfying, you know, once that show gets on stage and you sort of start to see your vision unfold. It's exciting.
So if a producer walked in the door now and said, could you direct XXX, what would that be? What's the one show that you would give up everything to direct?
I can't answer that. I don't know. I'm really bad at sort of picking.
There's not
place.
One that you're always like, oh, I really want to do this, or I've seen it and I want to make it mine.
No, there isn't. Okay. If I see something that good, then I don't want to go and try and do something different with it. I just want to enjoy it. Yeah, it's really a bit of an issue, me trying to pick plays. I find it hard.
Do you think that you'll stick with mystery, or are you going to go back to what's comfortable?
I like... when I go to the theatre, I always want to feel something and be challenged. I want to cry. I want to laugh and cry and have all those emotions. And that's sort of the plays that I'm more drawn to than mystery. This was a little bit of a detour for me. I'd never say never, you know, but I think I really want to get back more into the feels.
What do you think you brought to this mystery that, from your background, what do you say, oh, this is... You know, I'm going to bring in a little bit of what I know to such a different play. What do you think that is?
Oh, I don't know. Just when I read it, I'd sort of had a few ideas about how I could approach it maybe a little bit more differently. Whether that pans out remains to be seen. You have to come along and see, I guess.
James, what do you think about that? Since you've done Agatha Christie before, what do you think about some of these, you don't have to tell us what they are, but some of these little surprises?
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to be very, very careful about what I say here. So with all Agatha Christie stories, whether it's a Marple or a Poirot or one of the standalones, they tend to be very character-focused and very, very exposition-heavy because, as you say, they're planting clues. And if you watch it twice, you should be able to go back and go, aha, all of those things that I now know, I can now see all them now. I think what Emma's brought with this one is really emphasised the character interplay, even things that are happening in the background. Now, whether they're red herrings or whether they're not, or whether they're important, I'm not going to tell you.
Oh.
But there is always things happening in multiple layers of the show.
Oh.
And if you now to see if that plays out in the way you think it's going to play out, you're just going to have to see it.
Oh, maybe twice.
Okay,
now I'm thinking, when can I see it
good
again?
Good ticket sales tick for James there. James, is there a show that you would love to do that you haven't done yet, either as an actor or director, but that one show that if someone walked in the door and said, could you give up everything for 3 months and work on?
Oh, okay, yes, I do have an answer for this one. It's unfortunately a show that I cannot be in because I am not the right age, but I, for the longest time, have loved Skylight by David Hare.
Okay.
National Theatre Live did a version of it many, many years ago with Bill Nighy and Carey Mulligan. Still to this day, one of the best things I've ever seen. And it's
Skylight.
Yeah, it's written in a it's not political in the sense that it's about politics, but it's David Hare who wrote it, so it's a lot of his opinions about sort of the Thatcher years. But it's not about Thatcher. But it's these two characters who are basically having this giant expository discussion about their relationship that's sort of breaking down. I'm being very vague on purpose because not knowing that going in is what part of the wonderful thing about watching it. It's an actor's dream in terms of what you can bring to those two characters. The reason I can't do it is because I'm not Bill Nighy's age and I won't be for another 20 so years. And there's another smaller role in it for a younger man and I'm too old for that role.
Right.
So I'm just going to have to sit and hope someone's going to put it on in 20 years and the play remains relevant, and maybe then I'll get my shot.
Wow.
But
I highly recommend anyone tracks down that National Theatre Live version. It's just a beautiful piece of performance by both of them.
Fantastic.
Can't write that down. All right, Viola, producer walks in the door, slams the script down in front of you. What is it?
Okay, they'll have to have the script but also a magic wand, because what I really want to be in is Anastasia the Musical, because it's my favourite musical in terms of what I've seen a stage adaptation of.
Interesting.
And I love musicals too, and I can't sing, so I need someone to wave a magic wand, give me all the training and the skill, and then pop me up on that stage as Princess Anastasia, and I'll make my little baby Viola dreams come true.
Oh, I love it.
That's such a beautiful, musical.
Yeah. It is. Mm. Oh, the song. So
have you been in many musicals over the years?
I think only about four. Yeah.
Haven't wanted to go along for vocal training?
I have tried.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know how successful it was. I think it's something that I'm prioritising other skill sets at the moment, but it's something I'll definitely come back to in the future just because I love it so much.
Yeah. Okay. Nice.
So you've been in four musicals and haven't had to sing?
I have, but in a chorus environment where I could easily lose any pitchiness of my voice. So
fair enough.
I've been lucky with it. I'm more of a dancer, so I often get put into the dance ensemble and can carry a dance strongly.
You'll find your note.
I'll find
for
it.
Sure.
Yeah, love it. All right, we're going to come back to you in a second and find out where people can book tickets, etc. Just a couple of things in our inbox coming up on our bulletins. The fabulous Captain Festus McBoyle has been in touch, and there's a free family fun day mash-up festival at Waterview Primary School on Saturday, May the 2nd from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. You're invited to a special day to celebrate difference and diversity within family and community. This mashup event held at the school guarantees to be most spectacular. Entertainment features the vaudeville musical comedy from Captain Festus McBoyle's Travelling Variety Show, the Waterview School Kapahaka and the Pacifica Group, plus chart-topping rockers Table Fox. Now, I can tell you personally, Captain Festus is a night out. Just to go and see him alone is entertaining. They are just fantastic. There's face painting on site. They're also giving away free lollipops thanks to Macy's. To find out more, head to captainfestus.com or to waterview.school.nz, and that was Saturday, May the 2nd from 11 a.m. And the Auckland Improv Comedy Festival is here. It's just kicking off from the 18th to the 25th of this month. It's running at Covert Theatre, so just jump on their website to find out everything that's happening. They've got the Twilight Zone improvised scenes from the deep, which would suggest Jaws is involved. Get all your tickets by heading to Covert Theatre. Just look them up online. If you've got something coming up, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. Now, Emma, take us through. When can people buy tickets? All of that sort of thing.
The tickets are already on sale, and from what I heard last, we're 40% sold.
Brilliant.
We're less than 2 weeks out. It opens on the 1st of May and runs through to the 16th. We've got three matinees over that time as well. You can get your tickets at dolphintheatre.org.nz. Do come along, but book soon because it is going to sell very, very quickly, being in Agatha.
And you've still got your Tuesday treats and your Wednesday wheel?
We've got the Tuesday treats, not the Wednesday wheel anymore. No.
Tuesday treats, so ice cream and a drink included in your ticket price.
Absolutely. It's a good night out.
Fantastic. That is absolutely awesome. All the very best for your season. Hopefully it's a sellout season. We're coming along. We'll see if we can work it all out. We love a good night of clues.
Oh, you'll have to see it twice.
And thanks for coming after a full day of rehearsals. We really appreciate that and know what that's like.
Yep, thank you. Cool. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Yeah, please. Take care. Thanks for filling in the seat again, Kristen.
My pleasure, as always.
Always lovely to have you here. And remember, if you want to win tickets to Harry Styles live in concert at either the Melbourne show or the Sydney show, jump online this week. It'll be going up this week on our social media. Enter the competition to win the book, How to Marry Harry. And then inside the book is your special ticket to send away to go in the draw to win those prizes. You can also get it from Good Books shops and online. Now, you heard Drax Project in the last week and they tickled your fancy.
Yes, absolutely. They played at the Blues game. They did the halftime show and then one special song after. And during the halftime show, the saxophonist had the fireworks coming out of the saxophone. And
So cool.
That was amazing.
So cool. Well, when they were young and starting out, they were here on this show singing their music. So cool. Here's Drax Project with Holiday. Have a fabulous week, everyone. And make sure you
kick some arts.
Send me your love, I'm gonna need it. I'm counting the nights until I see your face. I wish things were different, had little less distance. Just a couple of months until I leave LA. I ain't on holding. You and I met before I had this kind of life. Before I hit the road, like all the time, over time, not what we had in mind. Sorry I can't be there tonight, yeah. Happy birthday from my hotel room. No, I'm always thinking about you. Send me your love, I'm gonna need it. I'm counting the nights until I see your face. I wish things were different. Situation needs a whole lot of imagination, and we've been sitting trying to communicate our obligations. It's getting late, but you're just waking. We'll never get used to this, and I don't wanna miss our 1 year too. No, I'm always thinking about you. Send me your love, I'm gonna need it. I'm counting the nights until I see your face. I wish things were different, had little less distance. A couple of months until I leave LA. I ain't on holiday. Up all night for you to call me million miles behind. My only, only way.
your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some art, art, art. Go kick some art.